Information Technology versus Click Brands, Inc., 18-1090. Mr. Johnson, I understand that you're reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court.
Mr. Johnson, let's start with Ellis, step one. In the blue brief at 22 and 23, you argue that the district court erred by comparing the asserted claims to an information kiosk in a shopping mall. But why isn't an information kiosk sufficiently analogous where the kiosk attendant uses product codes, has a little computer, uses product codes to find product catalogs and shops within the mall that contain those products for the shopper when they come to the kiosk and ask? What specific portion of Claim 1 isn't covered by that brick-and-mortar comparison?
The question is sort of two-part, Your Honor. We think that the kiosk analogy breaks down in the same way it broke down in the DDR Holdings case. And in that case, the court recognized that due to the Internet nature of the claims at issue in that case,
now, tell me about this case.
And
my question was, what specific portion of Claim 1?
Several portions of Claim 1,
okay.
The two most important of which are the creation of a first information request message, and that is directed, it contains the product code, and it's directed to the cross-referencing database and returns not just product information, it returns a redirect message to another website. And so that, in essence, is just like in DDR Holdings. If you look at a kiosk analogy, the user is instantaneously and magically transported to another kiosk or outside of the kiosk that user is at. That's the first message. And then the second.
You're not carrying me along with that first one, so let's go to the second.
And then the second message is directed to that outside website, and again, just like in DDR Holdings, you would have to be transported to another kiosk, if you will, and that's the way conventional hyperlinks work.
Yes, that is the way conventional hyperlinks work.
In this case, though, the recitations of the claim are contrary to a conventional operation of a hyperlink.
But your kiosk operator sitting there using a conventional hyperlink makes that magic jump without anything else, don't they?
Not in the context of a 101 analysis. And if you look at, again, we're relying primarily on DDR Holdings for the same reason there. This instantaneous transportation outside of the kiosk is exactly what would happen if you didn't have the claim elements.
I have a difficulty in understanding your argument that DDR holding applies. When I look at DDR and all the cases that surround DDR, in DDR we had a particular technological problem, and we had an improvement in the computer technology as a result of the invention. Here, it seems to me that all you're doing is passing information along. I don't see any limitation that shows how that information is passed along or what happens. All we're doing is just getting information from A, point A, and moving it to point B. And there's plenty of case law that stands against you if that's the situation. So explain why that is not what we're looking at.
Again, Your Honor.
This is a database invention, correct? It's just a database. You're passing information along. There's no improvement of computer technology involved in this invention.
We strongly disagree.
Well, what is it? What's improved? What computer technology is improved?
The computer technology that's improved is the functioning and steps that the processor takes in which it automatically generates a first message to go to a cross-referencing database. We're not talking about the cross-referencing database itself as being the improvement, but the automatic generation of that message that goes to that cross-referencing database, the particular information that it retrieves, which is the Internet website that's outside of where the user is.
So far you've just described passing information along. Where is the improvement in computer technology? What is it that's been improved here in computer technology?
It's enabling a user to find product information in a way that was not done or not achievable in the prior art.
And that's where the kiosk example comes in. You go to a kiosk and you say, can I have information on oranges? And they hand it to you. There's no improvement here in that technology, not along the lines of DDR.
If you were modifying the way the computer was built, if you had a new chip that made it do this in a different way, but that's not what you're describing. You're describing standard computer technology arranged.
Well, we're certainly not describing a new chip, Your Honor. And
no, you're not. But you're not describing a new anything, as far as I can tell.
Well, our view is that you would be hard pressed to find claims of a more identical scope to the claims in DDR holding than you can in this case.
But DDR, as Judge Rayner was saying, DDR is part of a line of cases in which the functioning of the system is improved. The functioning of it, not its utilization, its functioning. It's not the same thing.
And we had similar holdings in EnFish, Data Engine, Core Wireless. That's a whole line of cases where we do find that computer programs or shifting, transmitting information and database programs do satisfy step one of Section 101. But, I don't see it in your claims. You're not using a specialized computer, correct?
The hardware itself is not specialized.
Right.
The way the hardware functions is non-generic.
So tell me if I'm misremembering, but in DDR, as I'm remembering, the key there was that there was a kind of picture in a picture on the screen with information from the interior picture coming from one place on the web and the exterior information coming from a different place on the web. And the invention was to make that possible without it even quite looking like a picture in the picture. Two different sources of information being integrated onto the display in a way that the different locations of the source of the information was made essentially irrelevant to the viewer. What's the closest to that kind of technological, maybe even all software, but in any event, technological achievement of something in the display that you think you have here?
It's that the user is at one web browser to begin with, and then upon activation of the hyperlink, instead of the user being transported to another website, just as in DDR Holdings, the user was not transported to another website, the information.
Well, wasn't really aware that he was being transported to
another.
Well,
in this case, the user's not.
Okay, so what happens here? So
the two information request messages, first to the database, just like in DDR Holdings, an information request message, if you will, went to a database to retrieve the look and feel components of the website and the look and feel components of the other website. So the first message goes to the database to obtain the internet address of the other website, and then the information is from the return and redirect message in connection with that first information request message, the generation of the second information request message to go to that other website, pull the product description and the other product information, and bring it back to the original web browser. So the user, just like in DDR Holdings, is not transported to another website and, in fact, not even aware that another website was involved.
Let me take you to step two for a minute. You argue in the blue brief at 30 that the district court erred due to certain underlying factual issues. Where in your opening brief do you cite any underlying factual issue that would make dismissal inappropriate? I couldn't find anything in the blue brief, an actual citation of an underlying factual issue.
I don't have a page number for your.
You should. Well, give it to me when you come back.
Okay. But I believe what we have done is cited to the claim language itself and the fact that those claim elements that were either ignored or we argue improperly dismissed by the district court were non-generic.
Okay, while you're looking, tell me where you argued that those factual issues would have changed the result in this case. So both those things when you come back up, please.
Okay, you're into your rebuttal time. You can continue or preserve it.
I'll preserve it.
Okay. Well, we'll restore you back to your full 5 minutes, okay? We took you over. So let's hear from the other side now. Counselor L. Jamal.
Yep. Good morning, Your Honors.
Can I ask you a preliminary question? You agree that only claims 1 through 4 are in this case?
Pardon?
Do you agree that only claims 1 through 4 are in this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Otherwise, we'd have a final judgment problem.
Right. So a couple of things I'd like to address in.
I have another preliminary question for you.
Sure.
In the red brief at 5-8, you argue collateral estoppel because of a stipulated judgment mm-hmm. in the District of Delaware. But that, when you read that joint stipulation, it says PAT reserves the right to appeal the dismissal if the Federal Circuit reverses the judgment of invalidity in the click of the bell. So why doesn't that joint stipulation indicate the intent of the parties was for collateral estoppel not to bar the present appeal?
Well, I think if you read the stipulation, the first...
I did.
Yeah, the first paragraph says they stipulate to entry of judgment of invalidity of claims 1 through 4. And then he reserves the right to appeal that final judgment, and he never does.
Now, but Section 101 was never litigated in the Delaware proceeding.
It
and,
was.
And that's a requirement. Excuse me. That's a requirement under collateral estoppel. And yet, don't you agree that Section 101, what we're talking about here right now, Alice, Steps 1, that was never litigated in the Delaware proceeding?
They fully briefed, and the briefs were pending when the stipulation.
But it was not litigated.
Well, I'm not sure how you look at that term, but it seems to me like when you have a situation where if I had filed a brief in that case, same exact brief, and the other side conceded and judgment was entered as a result of that, isn't that effectively a litigation? Now, there's only a final judgment once it's entered. By definition, that's a judgment upon which an appeal can be made.
You didn't discuss the language I quoted to you.
Which language is that? the reserve the right?
Pat reserves the right to appeal the dismissal if the Federal Circuit reverses the judgment and invalidity in Click. So how can you have collateral estoppel? How is it final if they reserve the right?
Well, they never appealed. They reserved the right to appeal the final judgment, and they never appealed that judgment. And so that...
Well, okay. Supposing we reverse here.
Right.
Can they then appeal under that stipulation?
How could they?
I don't know any
mechanism by which they could do that.
Well, remind me, what was the sequence in dates between the judgment here and Delaware is the other case?
Yeah,
the Delaware judgment.
So both parties filed the same motion at about the same time. In the California case, that motion was decided first, while the Delaware case was fully briefed. They then settled out and entered into this joint stipulation seeking final adjudication and
Were you involved in the Delaware case?
Pardon?
Were you involved in the Delaware case?
No.
Okay. Well, then do you happen to know, once the California invalidity judgment decision was reached, did the defendant in Delaware say, issue preclusion, and therefore there's nothing to litigate here in Delaware?
They could have. Potentially they could have, because you can use issue preclusion even though...
Yes, absolutely.
But I'm not, I'm not privy to those conversations.
And you're not aware of something that was on the record saying that?
I can speculate, but I'm not aware.
Okay. Let's assume, because it's kind of a natural explanation for what happened in Delaware, that is, we just lost the same issue in California. That one's going to go on appeal. There's no point in our wasting any resources here. We know this case is resolved by issue preclusion, the Delaware case. If we end up being wrong in California on appeal, in the ordinary course, I think it is true, I think if you'll find this in Wright and Miller, that you don't need to take an appeal in that second case. Rule 60B-5 allows you to come back and get relief in the second case if you win on appeal in the first case.
Well, here they dismissed with prejudice, and here they...
I'm not sure why that makes any difference.
Well, they sought a final judgment. They could have went to the Delaware court and said, look, let's stay the case while the case was pending.
They may have had several options to keep their potential for undoing a 101 adverse judgment at bay, but... One of them appears to me to be Rule 60B-5, which doesn't require an appeal. Indeed, Rule 60B is about post-judgment relief, not relief on appeal.
Well, they never appealed the final judgment in the Delaware case.
Okay.
They reserved it. They expressly reserved their right to appeal, and they never did.
Do I understand right that you do not need to win on your collateral estoppel point here in order to get an affirmance of the 101 dismissal?
No, okay. We do not. We raised it because it seemed to us like it was something that the court might want to consider. So we did.
Okay. Can you get to the Section 101 issues?
The second 101 issue?
Section 101 issues.
Oh, yeah. So... the DDR case, which the plaintiff seeks to analogize, in that case, the claim specifically, the last element of the claim, specifically included a limitation that created a composite web page. And the limitation read, using the data retrieved automatically, generate and transmit to the web browser a second web page that displays information associated with the commerce object associated with the link that has been activated, and a plurality of visually perceptible elements visually corresponding to the source page. It tried to create a look and feel as if you were never left that web page, and it was trying to solve a problem that was unique to the internet.
Much of the argument was about look and feel.
Yeah. And this has nothing to do. There is no technological improvement that is disclosed in this patent. In fact, the patent expressly states that it is leveraging two very highly successful and well-known technologies, the UPC system and the internet system.
And database management.
Yeah, and the web browser that is identified in the claim, there's no description of it being unique. The web servers that are identified in the claims, there's no description of it being unique. The internet is well known. So they're using conventional hardware and software and protocols to effectuate a long-standing abstract idea of disseminating product information. We see no technology here at all. And so that's been our position from the start. I think it's well briefed in our briefs, and I think Judge Wu got it 100% right. So those are our positions on the 101. I'm happy to dig in deeper if you have any questions, but I think they were well briefed. And I think that's all I have to say unless you have any other questions.
This case was dismissed on Rule 12b-6, correct?
Correct.
Does Berkheimer play a role here in any way?
No, I don't think it does because there are no underlying factual issues here. They're all admitted in the patent.
Well, your opposing counsel, when I asked him that, said, the language of the claims, that's his fact. And I've asked him to speak to that, if he can, when he stands back up. But you're going to have to anticipate him if you think there's anything you want to discuss.
So there was one claim limitation that Judge Wu looked at. It was the last limitation about whether you redirect it, transport it to another web page, or whether it automatically displays the web page on the browser. And Judge Wu said, look, I'm going to take your construction, plaintiff, and I'm going to use that. And I don't find any material difference at the end of the day because it's still the same non-inventive concept of using conventional, well-known technology to implement this abstract idea of disseminating information. So we don't see it. We don't see any disputes. There were no factual disputes. Judge Wu, in his order, I think in Appendix 4, noted that neither party points to claim construction disputes or facts outside the intrinsic record support their arguments about patentability. There were no expert declarations submitted. And the claims are on their face, are clearly abstract. And so the only issue that came down to was whether the implementation of that abstract idea was using conventional, well-known routine technology, and it's clearly it was. There was nothing in there, and they admitted in the patent. So I don't think the issue is whether there's a factual dispute. I think the issue is whether what the import of those facts are, and I think they're clear here that this is a 101 invalidity issue case. So those are our
positions. Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Johnson, we'll restore you to 5 minutes. If you need the time, 5 minutes, go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor was asking earlier about where in the brief, I believe the question was where in the briefing we argued that claim elements were non-generic.
Actually, no. I asked you two questions. One was, where in your blue brief did you cite any underlying factual issues that would make dismissal inappropriate? And two, where did you argue that those factual issues would have changed the result in the case? I asked you both those questions, and you had time to sit and look.
I don't know that we cited factual issues, but we certainly argued that on an element-by-element basis,
Well, we can do the same. We do the same thing on appeal as to reading the claims.
Well, if
that's all you're saying.
We're citing to the patent in its claim language and its specification.
So there's no other fact that you want to raise?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you want me to answer the second part of that question?
Well, no, because once you say there's no other fact, then it's purely a legal question up here.
Well, we think it is a legal question, Your Honor, exactly.
Wait. I'm sorry, Jim.
Okay, go ahead.
The reason I asked that question is I started with a preface saying you argued the district court improperly dismissed the claim under 12b-6 due to certain underlying factual issues. That's a quote from you, from your brief. So you're abandoning that argument.
No, Your Honor. What I answered the first question was the facts that we are citing are the claim language itself and the patent and its specification.
Okay, that's a question of law.
Those are...
Okay, fine. Thank you. We're doing semantics, I think.
And just to be clear, there's no expert declarations here or any other evidence that was submitted in the 12b-6 inquiry to back your Section 101 argument?
There were no expert declarations on either side of this issue, Your Honor.
Okay, good.
I have a couple minutes. Just want to summarize that basically we are asking this court to reverse the district court's decision based on two primary reasons. The first being that the district court, in its arrival at an abstract idea and the way it arrived at that abstract idea, was doing exactly what this court has cautioned against in overgeneralizing claims and stripping out claim limitations in a way that can be done with almost any claim. If the district court wanted to, it could simply say, well, this is internet commerce and there's an abstract idea. Almost any claim these days can be stripped of the claim elements and be labeled an abstract idea. And it's almost as if the district court assumed, because we have a 101 motion before us, that the job is not to determine whether there's an abstract idea, but let's assume there's an abstract idea and then just backfill and create the language for that abstract idea. That's the first primary reason that we're asking for reversal. And the second is, as I said before, we believe that these claims are almost identical in scope to the claims in DDR Holdings, particularly, I think it's claim one of the 339 patent in the DDR Holdings case, at least insofar as the Section 101 analysis is concerned. And all of that coupled with the very high hurdle that's associated with invalidating a patent under Section 101 leads us to argue that that hurdle has not been met in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We thank counsel for their arguments in this case. Our next case is Hamilton.